This is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. Bill Russell and I, Paula, are delighted to be with Ressa Aslan. Today we are talking about the whole notion of religion, particularly looking at the origins, evolution, and future of Islam, of which he speaks in his book, No God But God. Bill, you were talking about this notion of the authoritative, of power is going to seek to stay in power. And I think that your example with women coming into this is a very powerful one because it introduces notions like that, which was relatively new to Bill and me, of Islamic feminism.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it would suggest is if the potential and presumably the fact of major schisms within Islam on top of the ones that have developed over history.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's in the nature of reformations. So how is this manifesting itself? Let me back up. Is yours a widely held view that that Islam is in the midst of a reformation, or is this something you've developed?
There are a number of scholars who use the term reformation and use it deliberately. The Arab world doesn't use the term reformation. The word they use translates more clearly to reawakening, I think is probably the best way of seeing it. And sometimes even they use the French Renaissance.
Hmm.
There are a
but
number of scholars.
But the change is not being disputed. It's the what do you call the change?
Exactly. What is not being disputed by most academics who study this region is that there is this fundamental shift taking place in which authority is moving from the traditional institutions and going not just to individuals but to new institutions of individuals, essentially.
Like,
for instance, groups like these jihadists, like Al-Qaeda. There's a big question about, well, how do we interpret this global movement of Islamic terrorism, and what tends to be lost in the discussions of that is that these groups have set themselves up deliberately in opposition to the clerical institutions. In fact, what is really profoundly innovative about what bin Laden is doing is that he is telling Muslims, you don't have to listen to your clerics anymore. Your clerics do not speak for God anymore. That they have essentially lost that power. And this radical sense of individualism that he is giving them, in which he is, for instance, issuing fatwas. Well, you are not allowed to issue a fatwa unless you belong to one of these clerical institutions. Those are the only people who are allowed to do so.
Which he does not.
Which he does not. He has no scholarly credentials whatsoever. He is declaring jihad. Again, you are not allowed to declare jihad unless you belong to one of these institutions. So what he is doing is in a very public and deliberate and provocative way, seizing these powers to himself and then disseminating it to his individual followers.
Which is profoundly Western.
Profoundly Western, profoundly Reformation. In fact, one of the things that I talk about a lot is that jihadism, bin Laden, is a product of the Islamic Reformation, not a counter to the Islamic Reformation. He is, in a very strange way, the Martin Luther of his faith, in the sense that he is deliberately, I mean, I jokingly say every time bin Laden issues a fatwa, it's like he is, you know, nailing his 95 theses to the mosque door. He is saying to the Muslim world, authority rests here with me, not with these institutions. Now, he is not the only person doing that.
Does he say it also rests with the people who come to follow him, or it is only he?
Well, of course, like most reformers, like Martin Luther, when, you know, Luther's point was that authority doesn't rest in the institutions, it rests in the hands of the individuals. What he meant was himself.
But the cat is out of the bag.
But exactly. Well, that's exactly right. Cat is out of the bag.
It rests with the correct interpretation, and my interpretation
is
the
one.
Correct one.
Yes.
That is really radical when you go from the institution to the individual, because if the individuals, again, this is a very Western notion, if you have empowered the individual, then individuals.
Absolutely. And it opens it up, opens the door to wildly divergent views and viewpoints. And of course, what that inevitably leads to is the fact that only the loudest voice gets heard. And the loudest voice in this case is the voice that is slamming airplanes into skyscrapers. Bin Laden's is one of millions of voices who are saying the exact same thing and yet coming up with completely different interpretations of Islam. Again, to go back to the historical parallels with the Christian Reformation, that's precisely what happened. You had the Peasants' Revolt, you had Calvinists, you had Anabaptists, you had Lutherans, and most interestingly enough, of course, those who study the Christian Reformation know that almost immediately after Luther's revolution, Luther was seen as the enemy by the Protestants. He became the problem. And what we now refer to as the Radical Reformation very, very quickly separated itself from Luther. And as you say, Paula, the cat was let out of the bag. And once you put the interpretive authority into the hands of individuals, then all bets are off.
You also had the printing press.
That's what I was going to say. You add literacy to this.
which goes precisely to the current condition. It's not so much the printing press as accessibility. You mentioned the Quran translated into multiple languages. This is new, as you say. But the accessibility to the individual makes it possible for the individual to have access to the core documents, to the core experience, and then do their own interpretation.
Absolutely. And let's just keep in mind that you know, the perfect parallel of that is the internet. The way Bin Laden issues his fatwas is through the internet. The way these radically innovative and modernist interpretations of Islam are spread to, you know, from Boston to Jeddah is through the internet. The internet very much plays that role in leveling the playing field as far as information goes that the printing press did in the Christian Reformation.
Well, in your birth country, it wasn't the internet, it was audio tapes.
That's right. In the 70s and the 80s, it was audio tapes.
In
exactly.
Iran is specifically what
yes.
you're talking
yeah.
about.
And now, of course, the same thing is true with the internet in Iran. Over the last 5 years, internet usage in Iran has jumped 3,000%. Precisely for this reason. And again, this is sort of the really fascinating thing that's taking place is you have this widespread literacy in the Muslim world, greater access because of the internet through new and novel theories and opinions. And then, of course, this translation of the Quran into languages that people are suddenly able to read and understand for themselves and come up with their own exegetical interpretation. So,
and number four, women are being educated.
And women are being educated, yes, profoundly.
Grudgingly.
And coming to. And so now you have this completely new interpretation. And I would add a number five, by the way, to this. And I would add, again, going back to colonialism, which is where we started this conversation, this geopolitical fragmentation. You know, it's only been about 50 years or so that Muslims have had to stop thinking of themselves as members of a worldwide community of faith and instead as citizens of nation states. These are things that never existed before. And often, unfortunately, a lot of these nation states were created really arbitrarily. You know, these fabricated boundaries, these fabricated nationalities, congratulations, you're now Iraq. Whether you want to be or not.
Well, and none of these people signed on to the Treaty of Westphalia.
Yes,
that is not in the Arabic lexicon.
I'm wondering, as you think so much about this, when you talk about that the political secularism is a must if one is going to have this flourishing, particularly in the political state, how do you bring together the political secularism, that is to say, not religion, and the revolutionary message of Muhammad the Prophet, that is, you say, moral accountability, social egalitarianism. How do you make this leap when there is a rejection of what we think of as the way you get there is through the Western Enlightenment? Well, we also reject that. Mm-hmm. But how do you bring together this requirement of a secular state if these things are to blossom? And the revolutionary message of moral accountability and social egalitarianism.
Actually, Paula, I say the exact opposite. I don't think that that secularism is a necessary requirement for a modern political order. I think that first of all, I think that there's a misunderstanding about what the term secularism means. Secularism is only a 60-70 year old term, and what it means is the deliberate removal of religion from the public realm and at all levels of the public realm. That is different than secularization, which is the transfer of political authority from religious groups to civic groups. That is something that is a requirement. Secularization is something that is a requirement. Secularism is not, and the perfect example of that is our own country. We are not a secular country. We not only do we not forbid the role of religion in public life, we encourage it at every level. I mean, Israel is not a secular democracy. Israel is a Jewish democracy. You know, the England has a national religion in which the taxpayers,
it has a state religion,
in which taxpayers, whether they are followers of that religion or not, pay funds to, and in which the bishops serve in the upper house of parliament. The idea that somehow a modern democratic state has to be based on secularism, I think, is a fallacy. What a modern democratic state has to be based on is pluralism, is religious and ethnic pluralism. The notion that no one religion can have dominance over all other religious traditions, that is where a democracy comes from, and that is very much a part of Islamic history.
And most of us don't know that. Most of us think otherwise, and you will continue to open these horizons for us when we return in a moment. Reza Aslan is our guest. We'll be back in a moment with the Paula Gordon Show. Be with us when we do that.